Yo, it's the Southside's own Jonathan Hood. Weeknights on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
There's a blast deep into the night, and a two-run homer for Baez. And there it goes. Abreu massacres this ball to left center field.
Donna goes in motion left. Snap it to Michelle. He's running to the left. Angling, 25-20. Got a block for Brown. 50, 10, 5. Touchdown, touchdown, touchdown. Don't win it. We're headed to Atlanta.
Trubisky's going to run it. And he is going to get a first down. How about Trubisky to the 42-yard line? Oh, my goodness.
In the ring, Steamboat's got him up. A slam. The player inside Craywood, too. He did it. He's done it. Steamboat's leg muscle. And Flair has done it. Flair has done it.
Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood. Weeknights on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
What's up, what's up? And welcome in. You're listening to Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. Glad that you're with me with open phone lines at 312-332-ESPN. 332-3776 is the telephone number. Hit me up on Facebook, facebook.com. Also on Instagram, IGJHood. Love your Instagrams. We want to get your thoughts on everything that we've got on the show today on this Tuesday. We'll hear from Jesse Rogers, who covers the Cubs for ESPN.com. We'll hear from Jesse at 7:30 as the Cubs get ready for Game 2 against the Giants. Also, it's summer of football. Do you know what we do in summer of football? You should know by now. I've been doing this for a few years now. Summer of football. Nobody gets ahead of the football headlines like I do here on ESPN 1000, whether it's college or pro. Tonight is Chris Felica, Bear. Do you ever watch College Game Day on ESPN when the college football season is underway? He's always there on the side giving his picks and his thoughts on certain games around college football. Well, we're going to take a look and a deep dive at the Big Ten, at the a little bit of the Big 12, a little bit of the ACC. What does Vegas think of Ohio State and Wisconsin as far as their chances of winning, number one, the conference, and number two, winning the national championship? Like, if Alabama's won, who's 2, 3, and 4? We'll talk to Chris Felica, the Bear, from College Game Day coming up 8 o'clock for Summer of Football here on ESPN 1000. So if you're someone that likes to, lay a wager here or there when it comes to football, pro or college, Chris Felica's got you covered at 8 o'clock, an hour from now, here on ESPN 1000. We do Tales from the Hood, stories of sports, entertainment, everything else in between. You never know what you're going to get from Tales from the Hood. Also, it's Tuesday, Wrestling Tuesday. After SmackDown Live is over on the USA Network, every Tuesday night at 9 o'clock, Chicago time, we take care of you with a little wrestling slash sports entertainment talk. We know it's not for everybody, but for some, you welcome it. And so the WWE's always got stuff going on, so is New Japan Pro Wrestling and all the other organizations in between. We will hear from someone who loves Memphis Wrestling, who loves Jerry the King Lawler, and that is Scott Bowden from KFRpod.com. Scott Bowden was a former manager and actual talent in Memphis Wrestling. Memphis Wrestling, if you were a pro wrestler, whether you are Hulk Hogan or you're The Rock, doesn't matter who you were, you had to go through Memphis in order to be able to make it big. So Scott will talk a little bit about that with us coming up in 2 hours from now with Tuesday Wrestling Tuesday at 9:05 here on ESPN 1000. Also, we'll go to Vegas to hear from Nick Friedel, who covers the NBA for ESPN.com, his thoughts on the Bulls in their game against Atlanta, and just kind of the vibe, what's going on in Vegas when it comes to not just the Summer League, but also some of the NBA storylines. We'll get to Nick coming up at 9:35. And playing time for your thoughts as well, 312-332-ESPN. Hope that you had a great Tuesday. Hope that we're going to have a great Tuesday night together as we spend time together until 10 o'clock. And then is Dan Le Batard, Stu Gotts, and Greg Cody. So there really was no one major lead to start our show, because usually I will give you my thoughts on the most pressing stories of the day. There's a number of stories that we'll get to here before we hear from Jesse at the bottom of the hour. Let me start off with this, because I've heard this a lot. I'm not building a straw man when I go into this conversation with you regarding the NBA Summer League. Now, I'm not going to break down the games because that's what now what the Summer League is for. It's not to break down games. It's not even to break down talent. It's just kind of on. For me as an NBA fan, for those of you that are listening to me for the first time, you know that I'm a huge sports fan, huge Chicago sports fan, and I like the NBA. And so I work for NBA radio. I'm able to do shows there, but I like the NBA. You can't help but watching Bulls basketball over the years, the six championships in 8 years in the Jordan era, seeing what's going on with the ebb and flow of stories in the NBA, you can't help but to notice. And so I enjoy watching the NBA, not just the Bulls, but the entire league. And so I have heard this on the station today. I've heard it over the weekend. I've heard it in some other places. There was a host that I worked with last summer this time. I won't say his name, Bob Wischusen, who told me that this NBA Summer League, I don't get it. What is the point of the NBA Summer League? And I find it fascinating how there continues to be this disconnect about NBA, NBA culture, and what it's all about. Hashtag NBA, Twitter hashtag Petty Wars. It's all about the NBA culture. It just continues to rise and get bigger and bigger, not just the United States, but just globally. The game is a global game, more so than the NFL, more so than the NHL, more so than Major League Baseball. People can understand basketball. They understand the ball. They understand two hoops. They understand sometimes the strategy. But the one thing that comes out is star power, because you see their faces. They're not covered with masks. They're not skating around on the ice. You know who these guys are because you see them on a regular basis in the NBA. And I find it interesting that we continue to hear from some that will say, I just don't get the Summer League. I just don't understand it. I don't get why there's a disconnect for some when it comes to the Summer League. As I've been watching some of this coverage, kind of seeing what the Bulls are doing and seeing how some of these top draft picks are playing in a quarter, maybe a couple quarters, but not necessarily an entire game, but just because it's on, it's background, I'm keeping my eyes on it, right? Well, the Summer League has been in Las Vegas. The Summer League has been in Oklahoma City. The Summer League has been in Sacramento. I don't remember if it was in Salt Lake, but I know that a lot of it has been in Las Vegas. And I see these capacity crowds, sometimes standing room, depending on the matchup, of people who have traveled all over the country to be able to kick it in Vegas or kick it in Sacramento or kick it in Oklahoma City to be able to watch a Summer League. And I don't see why that's a problem. I don't understand why that is a disconnect for some. It's the same to me as Major League Baseball spring training. Like, it is amazing how some of you will leave Chicago, and rightfully so when it's cold, and go to Arizona or go to Florida to see spring training games. Some of you Cub fans, you'll get out there and you lay on the lawn like it's Ravinia. And because it's spring training, and even though you're seeing players with the numbers 70 or 80 or 90 or 99 on their back, and you don't know who they are, it's just baseball. And because you're attached to baseball and it's warm, you're watching it. So, of course, there's an attachment to it, because if you are a baseball fan and you get a chance to get a ticket in a flight to Florida or to Arizona to see spring training baseball, what's wrong with that? What's wrong with that, right? The same thing with NFL training camp. How many of you going to go down to Bourbonnais to see the Chicago Bears or their new coaching staff? Of course you're going to go down. You know why? Because you are attached to that brand. You're attached to seeing something football. Even though these particular practices are not like they were in Platteville, Wisconsin, or they weren't like it was back in the day. These particular practices, they're not even wearing pads. They're not even hitting each other. They're just kind of going through and just trying to understand the plays. You'll see some offensive action, but it's not like what you see in a preseason game. It's not what you would see in a regular season game. But the thing is, you're out in the sunshine, and you're watching your favorite Bears play. You're hoping to get an autograph, and you're just watching. The same thing with college football as far as the spring game. There was a capacity crowd at Notre Dame, on the home of the Irish, ESPN 1000, to be able to see the spring game. In the South, you're getting sold-out houses at Georgia, at Alabama, at Florida. You're seeing this also in the Big Ten. When the weather was right, you saw those spring games, and there were students and fans going out to be able to watch those games. Why? Because they're college football fans, because they just want to see their players. They want to get closer to the action, knowing that the season's right around the corner. So I just don't understand the bias, the built-in bias. And I wish I was telling you that this is some straw man I'm just trying to draw at 712. I'm really not. What I'm telling you is that I heard it on the station today from someone that's supposed to know the NBA. And I don't get the summer league. That is summer league. What is this? The point is that you're getting closer to the action. You go from the regular season to the playoffs, from the playoffs to NBA free agency, which is still going on, by the way. And then you get to the summer league where you're seeing young players being able to. And again, no one has an anchor tied to your ass to watch four quarters of it. The point is that you're watching it because, hey, you want to see what Wendell Carter brings. You want to see how some of those young Bulls look. Or if you have a favorite team and you're looking at another player or two. I saw Trae Young against the Bulls, just seeing how many shots he could put up for a half or maybe for a quarter. But people are so bothered by it. I just don't understand it. I just don't get it. Why don't you get it? It's the same as any of these other sports. Going to Major League Baseball spring training, yeah, sitting out in the sun, great. But then you don't even know who the players are. Some of the stars don't even play all the time, but yet you're out there. And same thing with the NFL. There's going to be a ton of people going to training camps all across this country. And you know what? They should. Because if they have the time and the money to be able to go out to those camps, they just want to see their players live. They might not, probably can't afford a ticket, but they are able to go to Bourbonnais to check out the Bears practicing. And the same thing in college football. So I just don't understand why there is this inherent bias or this question mark when it comes to the NBA Summer League. Like, I don't understand why this is happening. I don't get it. What is there not to get? It's a scrimmage. It's amazing as we talk to you about this here on Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. All right, let me move on to something else here. Let me get to someone that should be recognized as one of the best athletes of our lifetime. Maybe of your grandparents' lifetime. Maybe even before that. But there's always a gender situation when it comes to female athletes and male athletes. Serena Williams is the greatest female tennis player I've ever seen. If that doesn't sit right with some of you, I can understand why, because what I really need to do is break down even further of all the greats that I've seen play tennis and break down the barriers of male and female and just say Serena Williams is one of the greatest tennis players I've ever seen, right? And it's not me just being able to kowtow to political correctness. It's not about that, because you know that's not who I am. But what I am is someone that's concerned about being correct, not politically correct, just being correct. And that is when I see Serena Williams coming off of a pregnancy, coming off of having her baby, and she's out there and she's winning. I saw some of her match this morning. I'm like, wow, she's coming off of pregnancy. She's coming off of having her child, and she's still trying to get back into playing shape, and she's still dominating. I haven't seen anything like that before. And again, for someone who's 45, that's a Gen Xer that saw John McEnroe and saw Agassi and saw some of the greats in their prime. It's not like I'm this great tennis guy, but when you are watching sports as a kid and you're growing up and you're seeing these athletes on your television all the time, you can't help but to know the names. And with Serena Williams, she said something interesting just recently about how her opponents look at her as she talked to the press. Listen.
Madison Keys said earlier that when she was 5-2 up, she lost concentration because her mind drifted towards the last 16 tie against Serena Williams. She said, that must be really difficult being Serena Williams because everyone ups their game every single time they have to play her. What do you think? I mean, you have to deal with that every single time going on court, knowing you are number one, the one to beat. Have you just got used to that now?
I'm glad someone admitted that. But of course Madison does. She's just so smart and so on it. But yeah, every single match I play, whether I'm coming back from a baby or a surgery, or it doesn't matter, these young ladies, they bring a game that I've never seen before. And it's interesting because I don't even scout as much, because when I watch them play, it's a totally different game than when they play me. This is what makes me great. I always play everyone at their greatest, so I have to be greater.
She said it must suck to be you.
At first it did, but I like it because, you know, it kind of backfires as everyone comes out and they play me so hard, and now my level is so much higher because of it, from years and years of being played like that. So it's like, you know what? My level has, if it wasn't high, then I wouldn't be who I am. So I had to raise my level to unknown, because they're playing me at a level that's unknown. And so now I'm used to it.
You love the confidence. I know I love the confidence, and how she has to raise her level, because when she sees an opponent on film, it's like, well, that's not the opponent that I'm taking on, because they're trying to take down one of the greatest of all time, if not the greatest of all time, in Serena Williams. It is amazing to watch her perform in her prime, and I guess she's still in her prime now, because watching her, she's still being able to get the job done. We don't talk a lot of tennis on the show, but I recognize what's great, and Serena Williams is great. And in this very cynical sports society that we live in, where you find memes and you find any little thing to nitpick, you know, Serena Williams, she's bold, she's strident, but she's great. And so she's going to give her best, as we talk about this here on Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. Let me move on to something else here, because I want to get to the Chicago Cubs here. The Chicago Cubs and the Chicago White Sox. And by the way, White Sox fans that complain about no White Sox coverage, yesterday's show on our episode Lit Chocolate, you can go back in the archives for the Under the Hood podcast, look for Lit Chocolate, and you'll be able, and that was yesterday's show, hear Chris Kampka, who was terrific from NBC Sports Chicago, had some terrific numbers when it comes to the White Sox and talking about their future. Go back there, hour three, he was on the program, and just immerse yourself in some terrific White Sox talk there. But as far as the Sox and the Cubs are concerned, I saw this piece on ESPN.com. Who's your team's most important player for the second half? For the Chicago White Sox, it was Lucas Giolito, it says here, from ESPN.com. After an encouraging spring, the former first-rounder has been one of the worst pitchers in the game in the first half. No question there. Just saw him recently against Houston. He looked lost. His percentage of pitches that have found the strike zone have declined, along with his swing and miss rate. Giolito must remind the White Sox of his upside in the back half of the season. Who's the most important player on the Cubs in the second half? Yu Darvish is listed on here. Having failed to develop their own pitching, the Cubs have had to make sizable commitments in the trade and free agency markets to acquire it. Darvish has struggled to stay on the mound and perform when he is healthy. For the Cubs to match deep into October, for them to be able to march deep into October, they need Darvish and Jose Quintana to be aces. Well, I don't think Darvish is going to be an ace, but Quintana can pitch better. I know that for sure. We'll see him on the mound tonight as the Cubs take on San Francisco. Which brings me to Buster Olney, who was on with Golic and Wingo this morning. And I've said this for the whole entire first half of the season for the Cubs. I said that this Cubs team is built offensively to be able to make some noise in the playoffs. I also said when the season started that I was not a big fan of the Darvish signing, and that the starting pitching, or the pitching in general, would have some question marks, because as much as John Lester is my MVP for this Cubs team, he is, you can choose Almora, you can choose Baez. I just think that you got to have some pitching in order for it all to work. Offense is one thing, but Lester is the guy. I think you and I both know that. But when it comes to the pitching with Jose Quintana and Kyle Hendricks, who pitched well enough to win yesterday for once, by God, and Chatwood and Darvish and Montgomery, if you have question marks about your starting pitching, I have question marks about you trying to get to the World Series. In a National League, by the way, that can be had. Now, of course, baseball's a little trickier than the NBA or NFL because anybody can get hot and just stay hot right into October, right through a deep run in the playoffs. So, I mean, who knows, right? But I kind of think that the Cubs, offensively, are the best team in the National League, but not very good or maybe in the middle of the pack when it comes to starting pitching and pitching in general. And so let's hear from Buster Olney, who I think Cub fans need to hear this. Manny Machado, is he coming to the Cubs? Probably not. Let's listen.
I think right now, probably the Milwaukee Brewers would be considered to be the front runner. We saw a decade ago their owner, Mark Adonazio, stepped out and was super aggressive going and getting CeCe Sabathia when his team had an opportunity to win. I think that could happen here. The Dodgers are definitely involved. But historically, Andrew Friedman, who runs their baseball ops, does not like to pay a high price. And the way this is playing out for the Orioles, they're going to get a high price for Manny Machado, as they should.
Uh-oh. Uh-oh. What if that's true? A lot in May and June, we were taking calls and seeing on social media how some Cub fans would have liked Manny Machado to be on this Cubs baseball team. And I said at the time that the Cubs really don't need Manny Machado. Sounds crazy, right? But if you believe in the team and the lineup that Joe Maddon throws out there on a daily basis, if you believe that's strong enough, then you should go with that. But I think that Manny Machado to the Cubs, that doesn't look likely. Now, here's a question. What if Milwaukee gets Manny Machado? Now you have a veteran on that lineup for Craig Counsell. And a move like that could push Milwaukee over the top. Now, over the top could mean win the division. It could mean solidify themselves in the playoffs. Even a young team like Milwaukee, having a Machado on the team could really pay dividends for that franchise, for that team, for the short term. And as I mentioned, offensively speaking, the Cubs, will be fine. But between now and the deadline, the Cubs have to find something better when it comes to starting pitching. Because at this point, just in the first half, the Darvish thing is just not working. It's not going to happen. Second half, maybe things could change. I mean, I think you can hold out hope for that because Darvish is a veteran pitcher, even though I don't think he's right for the team. Even though I think that was a mistake to sign. But it doesn't necessarily mean that he can't provide something for the Cubs in the second half. You know, we keep our eyes on that. But then you are looking at, after Lester, are you looking for Quintana to be that number two pitcher? Are you looking at Montgomery of being that number two pitcher? Are you looking at Kyle Hendricks? And Hendricks, I thought, was terrific. I think that when you needed a shot in the arm, even in a losing situation, Hendricks gave you what you're looking for. And I was talking to Felix about this yesterday as we were kind of keeping our eyes on the game on last night's show. I said, you know, Hendricks with his 87, 88 mile an hour fastball and just moving his pitches around, his off-speed stuff, I think that that is good. But when you get to the point where your off-speed stuff and your fastball look the same and in the same location, that's not going to help you. It's not going to help you because the second and third time around the order, they're just waiting for whatever fastball or whatever you call a fastball, whatever you call a curveball, they're just going to be sitting on it. And Hendricks is crafty. You don't get many crafty righties, but he's a crafty righty. But is that a guy that you can pencil in as a number two starter in a playoff scenario or you can depend on for the second half? I think he's a nice pitcher, but not someone that I think that can be able to rally behind John Lester in that number two hole in the starting rotation. So the Cubs have to be able to do something here. They could stand pat and just wait to see how everything emerges, but I don't think that's what Theo and Jed are all about. They are trying to get this World Series. They're trying to win this championship. And if you are a Cubs fan, you must enjoy this because it's a far cry from what Cubs baseball used to be back in the day. Where you millennials that think it's just about a tear down, rebuild championship, it's just not that simple. It is not Hershey's syrup in milk. It's just not that simple. Because for years, the Cubs were a team that did not care about whether or not the team was going to win the World Series or not because they were mismanaged. But with we see here from McLeod and what we're seeing here from Jed and Theo, they are about winning. But who do they have to get rid of to be able to get that done? what gems in the minor leagues are they willing to part with to be able to get that done? And so, again, a big question. We'll see how the Cubs finish out the rest of the first half of the season, and then we'll see what happens at the trade deadline, because they've got to acquire some kind of starting pitching that you can plug in there and say, yeah, this guy is good enough to be a number two after Lester. So we'll keep our eyes on that. More on the Cubs with Jesse Rogers live from San Francisco. We'll review the Cubs in their matchup against the Giants yesterday. Look ahead to tonight's game as you're listening to Under the Hood.
You're listening to Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. You're listening to Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
Glad you're with us here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood, weeknights at 7. Hit me up on Twitter, twitter.com, tweetjhood. Also on Snapchat, snapjhood. You follow me on Snapchat, and I will follow you back, guaranteed. Glad you're in with us today. Yeah, so as I was saying at the start of our show, this bias, this cultural bias that comes into the NBA, I just find it really incredible how some are looking at the summer league like it is, like it's a disease. Like, oh my God, I don't understand the disconnect and the confusion of what summer league really is. It's a scrimmage. The scrimmage, just like spring training, just like training camp in Bourbonnais when you go down there, or when you go to a college football spring game. It's a scrimmage. This is a showcase of some of the young talent, and also it becomes a reality show in some ways too, because there's some veterans that are trying to get a job. And trying to get locked into a job there. There's a number of them on the Bulls team, but yet there's this confusion. You have to be able to understand very clearly what a scrimmage is and what a real game is. And I just find that just funny how that is that seems to be a problem for some people. One of the news stories that you just heard from SportsCenter just moments ago from Basquiat talking about Carmelo Anthony. Bulls fans, remember that you wanted Carmelo Anthony on the Bulls. You were going to hike your skirt up as high as you could to be able to have Carmelo on the team. It's just, our city is just really funny to me when it comes to free agents and thinking that top-notch free agents are just going to come to Chicago just because. It just doesn't work out that way. Carmelo Anthony, I remember when he was a free agent and he had thought about coming to Chicago, thought about being a part of this Bulls team. And no matter what the price, everybody wanted Carmelo on the team, as if Carmelo was the difference between a championship and not. Of course, when you're a fan, you want the best for your favorite team. I totally get that. But Carmelo Anthony, if I bring up the name Carmelo Anthony, what's the first thing you think of? What's the first thing that comes to your mind? It could be the idea that Carmelo Anthony is one of the best players that we've seen without an NBA championship. That very well could be the case. You can think about his wife, Lala, on the show Power. She's tremendous. Melo's tremendous for marrying her. And you also think of someone that's kind of in the twilight of his career trying to figure out what to do. After being with Oklahoma City, and after 1 year, the Thunder were like, yeah, you want to do something here financially? I don't think you really fit here. And so he's the guy looking for a job. The NBA, yes, is it based on a few teams winning the championship? Oh, I mean, that's just the way it's been for a long time. It's been that way since at least the 1960s, where it was just a few teams, a handful of teams, that really had a chance to win the NBA championship. And so when you're Carmelo Anthony, you're trying to figure out how I can get a ring. Melo's has got all these gold medals from playing for Team USA. A national champion with Syracuse. I remember being, I think that game was in New Orleans when he won the national championship. And I asked him in the press conference, Melo, what are your fondest memories of Syracuse as you leave the school? And he was just like, I didn't say I was going to leave yet, when you knew he was just going to be one and done. But I had to ask the question because I knew that he was going to be done with Syracuse after his first year. But just an all-time great player as far as points, as far as longevity, but as far as him winning a championship, he's trying to glom on to Houston now. The league is very interesting, where you could have a DeMarcus Cousins that will take the minimum, 1 year, $3.5 million, and only play half the year to try to win a ring. And that's just, it's just the aggressiveness of some players, veteran and young players, just trying to be a part of a championship. There was a time in the 1990s where you'd turn on MTV, MTV Cribs, you see all these NBA players, all the money that they have, and all the cars, and all the women that they had, and all that. And that was really the time. In the 90s, you were flashy. You were showing how much money that you can make and all this kind of stuff. And championships were kind of in the back burner. I think the generation of millennials that are playing this game today, I think they're totally, totally in to try to do what they can to be able to win a championship. They are concerned about legacy. There's no doubt about that. When you talk to young players, they talk about being part of a championship team by any means necessary. Swiping left, swiping right, just trying to figure out what's a good fit for me. And it shows you the power of the league. Probably when I talked earlier about how some really don't get the whole NBA Summer League situation is because I think that some of you are just not used to an actual league being run by players. You know, like when it comes to lockouts and strikes, there are some times that some fans are just on the owner's side. Like, oh, the players are just looking for too much money, which is so weird to me. It just, I think that's just really bizarre, because to me, you want both sides to come to the table and be able to win a championship, and it's just, I love the picking sides when it comes to one of our, you know, sports locked out or on strike, like the NBA or Major League Baseball. So there you go. Something else too I want to point out, and that is Manny Machado. We talked earlier about him, about Manny Machado. He said to the press as he's with the Baltimore Orioles, and Manny Machado is a terrific player. The All-Star break will be anything but a break for him because he just says he wants to stay focused. There's questions about whether he's going to go to the Yankees. We heard in our last segment that he could be with the Milwaukee Brewers because the Brewers are kind of zeroing in, willing to give up young players to be able to get Machado. On the list of teams that Machado could go to, the Atlanta Braves, the Milwaukee Brewers, the St. Louis Cardinals, the Cubs, the Diamondbacks, the Dodgers, the Indians, and the Phillies. They're among some of the playoff hopefuls that have been mentioned in potential deals, but nothing has come to pass just as of yet. So, but that story that we played earlier from Buster only saying that there's a good possibility of Machado going to Milwaukee. If you're a Cubs fan, keep your eyes on that story because that you never know if that comes out. And then it puts even more pressure on the Cubs to solidify themselves as a contender, a real contender in the National League. Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. We're going to have Summer of Football coming up at the top of the hour. We'll hear from Chris Felica. If you're a college football fan, stay by your listening device because Chris is going to take a look at some of these teams in college football from a Vegas standpoint. Who's going to be the best in the Big Ten? Who's going to be the best when it comes to the ACC or what's going on in the SEC. So just stand by. And also, can NIU win their conference this year? We'll get into that as well because NIU is a strong favorite in the MAC, but can they be able to survive? We'll talk to Chris about that as well coming up with Summer of Football 8 o'clock. The other baseball item I had for you tonight is talking about Mike Trout. Last night, we played a soundbite from Tim Kirchin, who was on my Sunday show, on the Dickerson and Hood Sunday show. And we're talking about Mike Trout. And Mike Trout and the Angels took on the Los Angeles Dodgers for a 3-game series. And Sunday Night Baseball was the Dodgers and the Angels. And I talked to Tim Kirchin about how he looks at Mike Trout. So there are some tremendous numbers when it comes to Mike Trout, how he's walking with legends, walking with giants of the game for a guy that's in his, what, sixth or seventh year in the league? And he's got some tremendous numbers so far. And because of that, in some circles, he's the face of baseball. Face of baseball, but yet a lot of people don't know who he is. And I think that is troublesome for the game. As you and I talk about the Cubs and we talk about the White Sox here in Chicago, I think that what's best for the sport is to be able to find someone that is the face for the sport because how else are you going to be able to attract young players or young kids to the game? Look, for me, as someone that's a Gen Xer, baseball was already on my TV as a kid. So they got me. If you're a baby boomer, if you're a Gen Xer, a Gen Y person, they got you. because you've watched baseball. It's someone in your family loved baseball. You went to the ballpark. You went to Wrigley Field. You went to Old Comiskey Park. So just like I did, went to all these games. You went to County Stadium. You went to these ballparks. And so baseball is somewhere in your blood. So when it comes to 2018, my concern as a baseball fan is what the future of baseball will look like. The future of baseball is something that I think about often, because as we focus so much on the NFL and college football and the NBA, the one thing that you don't want to die is something that you might have grown up with, and that's Major League Baseball. And I've heard some of the conversations on the station. It's kind of funny because, I'll give you an example. On Sunday mornings, when I hear Fred Huebner and Chris Black and Adam Abdallah, there's always this tug of war of Fred, who is a baby boomer who loves baseball, and I've known Fred for over 20 years, worked with him for over 20 years. I know he loves the sport, just like I love the sport. But then you have Chris and Adam with their resistance and talking about soccer and talking about other sports, and they blame baseball for them not being bigger fans. And I love that back and forth, because there's a generation gap between Chris and Adam and Fred on Sunday mornings when it comes to baseball. So I, as a listener, I sit back and I kind of chuckle at that, because it's just like you can tell that there's a divide between the two on this sport. And so if Mike Trout is someone that plays for the Angels in Los Angeles, but not quite Los Angeles, it's Orange County, you would think that there would be more of an emphasis on what Mike Trout can bring to Major League Baseball, playing in Orange County, playing in Los Angeles, and it's really not the case. So hopefully for baseball, baseball will be able to put a bigger spotlight on the Mike Trouts, on the Stantons and others, because just like we know who LeBron James is and Steph Curry, and just like we know some of these other great athletes, hopefully baseball will do a better job of being able to market their stars. I mean, here's Mike Trout in Orange County, right? And still, not enough people really know who he is. As you listen to ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app, Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood, as we go to San Francisco, a man who covers the Cubs for ESPN.com is Jesse Rogers. And Jesse joins me here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app as we get ready for the Cubs and the Giants. Hello, Jess.
Yeah, good evening, Jay Hood. I just got done with Joe. Sorry a few minutes late, but, you know, when Joe speaks, you got to be there to listen, right?
No, absolutely. No, I was just pontificating about the baseball and Mike Trout while I was waiting for you. But could you give us a little insight of what Joe was saying?
Well, I think the best news that Chris Bryant is going to return as soon as tomorrow. I thought it'd be Friday, but it looks like everything went well at the rehab. They had a day game today in Tennessee, allowed him to get on a flight. I think there's two flights. We looked it up, from Nashville to San Francisco a day, and he was able to get on that second flight. So he should be here late tonight and probably be in the lineup tomorrow. So that's great news. And Joe was just talking about it. He was kind of taking a poll internally. What do we do with the lineup now that KB's back? I mean, Baez has really done well at the top of the lineup. Obviously, Almora, when Zobrist is in there. I mean, talk about a manager that has an embarrassment of riches. Most teams can't find eight players and where to bat them. Joe's got 10 or 11, and that's his only problem. Where to put KB when he returns, the MVP. He can't find a spot for him. But he will, first, third, second, who knows. But should be back tomorrow. That's the biggest news of the day.
Does that news surprise you? Did you think he'd be back so soon?
Well, I just thought it'd be Friday, you know, with the day off coming Thursday. Just kind of made sense, meet him in San Diego. But I guess, you know, if you got to fly out west anyway, you may as well just come here if he's ready. So, yeah, it surprised me by a day. I mean, it actually is longer than I thought he'd be out initially, to be honest. So, in one respect, he's been out longer than first expected. But he'll get the day game in here in San Francisco, take the day off, and then play three in San Diego, then get three more off. So that can only help his shoulder, having a few days off in between.
You know, someone that I haven't talked to a lot about, and I think we should have more conversation about, he's not an all-star, but I think that he could be a future all-star in Almora. What do you like about his overall game and his presence in the lineup for the Cubs?
Well, yeah, I mean, we know what he does defensively. We don't have to talk about that. He's been a great defensive center fielder his whole life. I mean, this is not a surprise to anybody that's followed the Cubs or knows Almora's career. What he's done offensively is interesting, because he's still not taking a lot of pitches, but that's okay. I mean, he's learned to swing at the ones that are his pitches. You know what I mean? Like, he will jump on the first pitch of the game because that's his pitch. Something, you know, fastball down the middle, whatever the case may be. So I feel like even though he's not walking a lot, he's still learning how to hit at a you know, better rate than he did certainly in the past against right-handers especially. I just love the aggressive approach at the plate, and even though it's aggressive, it is not a guy that swings outside the zone and stuff like that, not too often at least. So that's where he's matured. He's really swung at his pitch and made more contact than not, and I think that's why you see the batting average that it is. And he'll take the occasional walk. He'll walk more than Baez, Jay Hood, but he won't walk like a traditional leadoff hitter. But you know what? If you're hitting 320, that's just as good. So really like how he's come along against the right-handers, especially hitting his pitch. I think that's the key.
Jesse Rogers covers the Cubs for ESPN.com. He joins me, Jonathan Hood, on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. Let's play the match game for a second here. Fill in the blank for me. Kyle Hendricks, this is the best stuff I've seen from Kyle Hendricks since blank.
I would say early 17, possibly right after he came back from his injury when he locked in. I'd say one of those times. I don't want to say going back to 16 because he had some good starts last year. But on a consistent basis, it reminds me of 16, that's for sure. Last year was a little bit more spotty. But I think he had a couple of these type of starts last year. I don't think he's had one this year where the ball was moving like that. So we got to go back at least a year, maybe even two. That's the way Joe put it as well. I mean, Joe said that was the best he's seen him, and we know what he did in 16. He did this kind of stuff, you know, night in and night out every 5 days. Last year, a little more spotty, but definitely the best of this season, no doubt about it.
Jess, we put our focus on the starting pitching. I mentioned earlier what Buster Olney said to Golic and Wingo this morning, saying that the Brewers are keeping our eyes on Manny Machado, which I think that'd be interesting if he's playing in the National League Central. But I think the focus is always on the starting pitching for the Cubs. What about the bullpen? Do you think that they'll try to improve with a couple of veteran arms down the stretch in the bullpen?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, no matter what, they would have. But they definitely have a need there. I have a post on ESPN.com going up tomorrow about specifically left-handed relief. Montgomery's in the rotation. Dunsing's hurting, although he pitched well today at AAA. Double A. I think that there's a need back there. I don't think a lot of people trust Justin Wilson. He's on, he's off, he's on, he's off. You know, who's that guy that's going to get Bryce Harper out in a playoff situation? Or think of the other lefties in the league. And I don't think the Cubs have him on the roster right now. I really don't. I mean, Wilson is okay, can get it done, but you can't count on it. So I think left-handed relief is their number one priority, along with getting maybe another starter to help out. Because what if Darvish doesn't come back? What if Montgomery tires? There's too many variables for them to just go with the five or six starters they have in camp here. They need another arm, even if they stash them in the bullpen or a AAA. So that's the two biggest needs. And they might add a righty as well, even though I think they're covered. C-Shack, Edwards, Morrow, Strope. I think that's enough to get it done, but they may. So lefty relief, another starter, righty relief. I'd go in that order. And that lefty reliever might be a guy that can do both. We'll see. Sort of taking over Montgomery's old role. Those are the needs. So it's not a bat. It's not Machado. Their position player base is set, in my opinion, even though you'll hear rumors, Jay Hood. I think it's all about the bullpen.
Just I don't want to bypass that Machado thing. I don't know if you heard that from Olney. What if Machado signed with Milwaukee? How do you look at the National League Central then?
I mean, I think it's tough now. It's just going to be as tough with him there. I don't think Milwaukee's going away either way, mm-hmm. whether they have Machado or not. It just makes them that much better. Last year, look at the second half numbers for the Brewers on offense. They tanked. I don't know if that's in the back of their minds, but they have a deep team now. He just makes them that much deeper. Remember we talked about roster composition? You asked me about that?
Right.
It's very similar. And you add Machado, they get even deeper. So this is a battle. I mean, forget about payrolls and name recognition and all that stuff and all-stars. This is going to be a battle. Milwaukee has not gone away. The Cubs usually play their best ball under Joe in the second half. I think it's going to be a great one, whether Machado's there or not.
What's the lineup today? Same from yesterday?
No, not exactly. Another lefty in there, Derek Holland, is filling in for Cueto. Not filling in, but they pushed Cueto back a day. So back-to-back lefties, Schwarber's not going to start either of these first two games. He'll start tomorrow. But Rizzo's going to sit. You know, he had an awful game last night. So So he's on the bench with the lefty. Hayward's back in there. I mean, Joe is really rotating even more than normal. If you think of Rizzo, I mean, that was a guy you wouldn't see out of the lineup after one bad night, but he is. He's gonna sit these guys if they show any fatigue at all. And after last night, I think it's not a bad idea. He just had a bad game. Almora leads off. Hayward, the only lefty in the lineup tonight. Baez, Contreras, Russell, Bodie, Happ, Caratini, Quintana. So both you see Contreras and Caratini in the lineup at the same time. Caratini filling in at first base. That's something you would not have seen, obviously, with Jimenez up here. Caratini gives them a little bit more flexibility. So you got Rizzo, you got LaStella, you got Schwarber, all these lefties on the bench when the Giants go to the righties out of the bullpen. It's an embarrassment of riches in the lineup, for sure. I mean, the fact that you can go to Rizzo, you can go to Caratini, you can go to, you know, KB. I mean, you don't have KB or Rizzo tonight, and you still feel good about this lineup. You'll feel a lot better when they're both in it tomorrow for the first time in about 3 weeks.
So what's it like for you to be able to carry your book, Try Not to Suck, on the road? I'm sure that you have, like, you know, boxes, you know, sent to San Diego, sent to San Francisco, so you can sell them out of your car. What's that like?
Well, I have to check a whole other suitcase for the books alone. You know what I'm saying, Jay Hood? I pile in about 40 books and just start handing them out, even if they're not Cub fans. I was hoping to see Steve Kerr here. He wanted a copy of the book because, you know, he's out here just winning championships left and right. And I was going to get him a copy, actually, for his son. His son is a Cub fan. Steve's a Dodgers fan, yet they go to the Giants games. And, of course, when the Cubs are here. But I'm not sure if he's coming. But I actually have, like, one book of mine. I just reread it every night.
Try Not to Suck. You can find that at Amazon and wherever books are sold.
Exactly right, Jay Hood. You're the best promoter in the business.
You're just unbelievable. You still don't know how to do this. All right, Jesse, as always, I appreciate it, man. Thanks for coming on the show.
Okay. Talk to you later, buddy. You're the best.
All right, Jesse Rogers covers the Cubs for ESPN.com. All right, coming up after the top of the hour, we will do Summer of Football. If you're a college football fan, the Bears coming on with us, Chris Felica from College Game Day. We'll get his thoughts on how he sees the Big Ten, how he sees the MAC. Is NIU going to win that division? So nobody gets ahead of the football news like this show, College and Pro. We have it for you right here on Under the Hood.
Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000.